You're listening to Breakfasters here on Triple R with Jeff Geraldine and Sarah. The Art of Frugal Hedonism is a new book written by Annie Fraser-Rowland and Triple R's own Adam Grubb and published by Melodoro Press. Annie is joining us now in the studio. Welcome to Triple R.
Good morning.
Most people associate hedonism with excess so much that frugal hedonism sounds almost like an oxymoron. So what does the term mean? How can you be frugal and hedonistic at the same time?
Well, the premise of the book is that frugality actually leads to a deeper form of hedonism because you get to work less and frolic more and feel less stressed and turn out generally healthier and more connected socially, and all of those things that actually mean that you're properly happy on every level.
You make the point that the expectations that people have today were so different from the expectations that people had in the past. You quote some amazing statistics about the 50s. You say that the average house is now three times the size as it was back then, and the average serving size of popcorn has grown from three cups to 16 cups, yet people don't seem to be happier. In fact, there's evidence that perhaps they're less happy there in the 50s. So how do you explain that?
Well, I mean, that is sort of what's fascinating about what's happened as we've gotten wealthier and wealthier as a culture, is that we've just had this habit through most of history that we don't have enough stuff. We've been poor, we've been living in thatched roofs full of bugs and being cold and had to work too hard. And as we've become really resource rich and had this incredible amount of convenience available, we just keep going, more is better, because we've never had enough to sort of make that mistake before. And we've kept on that trajectory as we get more and more stuff available to us. But we've maybe taken it a little bit too far. We've sort of gone into overshoot where we've got so much of the good stuff that it's coming back to bite us in the bum, and it's starting to make us less happy rather than happier. So that is the main focus of the book, is how do we just find that sweet spot where we're consuming enough that life feels really tasty and we've got all the nice stuff, but we're not actually making ourselves kind of sick.
I was kind of struck by that, because it's so often that I go around to friends' houses now and they say, there's so much clutter. There's so much clutter. Or my friends with children say, please don't give them presents. We have too many toys. Kind of this idea that we've become a society with too much of everything seems so bizarre.
And yet that's the kind of phrase you hear kicking about all the time. Yeah. And it seems ridiculous that we are living in the most privileged society through any history of time, and so many of us are fairly miserable about all sorts of aspects of it. So the idea behind a lot of the tips in the book is just retraining our brains a little bit to counteract that dominant message of society that says more is better, more is better, to go, maybe a lot is really nice, but the amount that we're currently consuming is maybe just a little bit bonkers, and we could be having more fun if we just reined it in.
Well, let's talk about some of the specific tips. One of the ones that jumped out at me is you urge people to relish their experiences. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so we're always feeling a little bit embarrassed about this one, having started writing the book a couple of years ago when mindfulness was not the most popular word in the English language, which it now is as far as I can tell. But it's really about saying that there are so many sensory pleasures and we do not drown ourselves in them anywhere near as much as we could do. I mean, we're very visually orientated a lot of the time, and there's so much more that we could be lashing out on a daily basis that doesn't require spending money, that doesn't require buying things at cafes or other paid for services. Just focusing on little textures and tastes throughout the day and really living your animal experience to lap up those sensations.
I was reading it last night, and one of the things that you suggest is to stroke your dog's ear between your thumb and your forefinger. And I was like, yeah.
So,
Lloyd, come here, mate. I was like, oh, that is good. But you're right. It's just
your dog's getting a bald patch now.
Yeah, but just having a dog and just being able to pat it and just, you know, have it there and, like, appreciate that moment, I guess.
Yeah, or going, you know, you wake up and you can be lying there saying, it's really nice wriggling my toes between these crunchy sheets. You're lucky if they're crunchy because it means you've washed them fairly recently.
Yeah, but yeah, or these very not crunchy sheets.
Yeah. But then you go, oh, I better go on with the next thing. But there is absolutely nothing to say that just spending that extra 5 minutes lying there going, it's really nice wriggling my toes between these crunchy sheets. I'm going to make that into a thing. I'm going to do that. That's going to be part of my day. It's totally free. It's not hurting anyone. And yet it can actually be quite a deep pleasure. And yet we tend to, when we haven't paid for something, negate its value a bit because we've come so accustomed to associating spending money with getting something good that when something comes to us free like that, we don't give it that full weight and dive into it.
Mm.
So one of the tips we actually have in the book at some point is to say, pretend you've paid for it. If you're walking along and there's like amazing sun on the back of your neck and yet you're thinking about 267 other things, go, imagine this is like a movie. Imagine I've paid $5 an hour for this sun on the back of my neck. How much more focus do you give it then, and how much do you just stand and go, oh, that's really nice? Because
yeah.
Suddenly you've given it the value that we attribute to having spent money on something.
You talk about limiting the burden of choices. What's the burden of choices?
There's a long-held assumption that more choice is a good thing, and that's true to an extent, but there's a lot of studies coming out that say that once you have about more than seven, nine choices, that it's actually really mentally taxing and that you start to make worse choices, and that what's more, choice doesn't feel luxuriant when there's too many of them. It feels stressful and you tend to then beat yourself up for having ended up with anything less than perfect because you're like, well, I had so much choice. It's obviously my own fault that I haven't ended up with something perfect. Whereas if you just lower your number of options a little bit, then you reduce that stress and you're sort of like, well, you know, there was only so many things to choose from. And when we have so many companies vying for our attention, so many brands, we often will just get overwhelmed with the number of choice. And by becoming less of a consumer, you basically instantly cut your number of choices down. So if you say, I'm only going to buy organic, or I'm only going to buy my clothes from op shops, then you're sort of already cutting out 70% of the options, or I'm only going to buy things that aren't too packaged, or I'm just not going to buy as much. You are inherently, with those decisions, as well as saving money, limiting that exposure to mass choice paralysis that people even get when they're going, there's so many kinds of tissue box holder that I could buy. There's the quality heavy ceramic ones, and then there's the tin one that's a little cheaper. And just do less shopping and a lot of that stuff kind of evaporates out of life.
Do you have tips, though, for, I guess, living like this but also incorporating everyone else into your life? Because you might choose to live like this but all your mates might not, and then you're kind of faced with these same choices and these same, I don't know, you know, you can't kind of step away from all of your friends really when you're doing something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the book is really, it's not a book about lowering consumption that says run away and live in a yurt and raise goats. It is definitely
although,
not one
that
of those.
That sounds issues. Awesome.
That's an option if that's what you're into. It's really about just looking at your current lifestyle and then making some tweaks here and there so that wherever it's taxing you the most, you do less discretionary spending and less just knee-jerk consumption of the kind that you maybe haven't even thought about that is not making you actively happier.
Yeah.
And there are tips of two kinds, because the book is a collection of tips about how to integrate that with greater society. And one of them is, one sort of genre of those tips really focuses on just going, well, damn it, if this is good, then I don't care what you all think, and being pretty confident about that. And the other genre of tips is about maybe just being subtle about it and bringing friends on side in a non-aggressive way. But more having the confidence to make them a bit jealous about what a good time you're having.
often the expenditures that we make are kind of driven by lack of time. If we've got a really busy career, say, is it possible to use the kind of tips that you're talking about? Say you're working, I don't know, 10 hours a day at some high-powered job where you're busy all the time. Is it possible to implement these kind of measures then, or is it necessary to downscale your career as well?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, a lot of the more mental hacks are definitely applicable to anyone, no matter how much they're working, because we both love our work and Adam works a lot. I work a lot less because I am quite lazy, but he loves his work and works a lot of hours, and yet he manages to use a lot of the strategies in the book that are more just focused about how, where you choose to get pleasure from and how much you associate that with spending money, because that the aim of the book is to just get you more pleasure. That's probably first and foremost beyond spending less money. So the mental hacks around getting more pleasure are applicable to anyone. Some of the stuff about sort of cooking for yourself more are dependent on having more time, but lots of them also create more time so that they kind of, they're a self-reinforcing cycle and they help to buy you that time.
The book is The Art of Frugal Hedonism. It's published by Melodoria Press. We've been talking to one of its authors, Annie Razor-Rowland. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
You're in Chippewa.